You're listening to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. This is a special message from the Zimbabwe International Book Fair. The book fair will be hosting its annual book fair next week from the 2nd to the 5th of August at Harare Gardens. The theme for this year's book fair is making the book pay. So I believe if there are any aspiring authors out there or any authors who'd like their books to make some money for them, this is the event for you to attend. I'll probably be there. I haven't started writing books yet, but you know, maybe soon we'll have a Politics and Beyond book. So make sure you make it to the book fair if you're in Harare next week from the 2nd to the 5th of August. Back to your regular programming. And now. Capital 263. Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawande Henry Biti. And yeah, welcome to the best political podcast in the country, the region and the continent.
I think everyone who's been listening now actually just, they know. I hope they say it to themselves, you know, right, just before they tune in. They're like, you know what, we're listening to the best political podcast in the country, in the region, in the world. We're going for the world. And today is the 26th of July, 2017. We have another guest with us in the studio, Dr. Noah Manyika from Build Zimbabwe Alliance. Thank you very much for being here, sir.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I think, Dr. Manyika is another entry into the political space in Zimbabwe, a relatively new entry from the faces that we've been seeing. So,
for the new entries, he's an old. Amongst the new entries, he's an old entry.
He's quite seasoned. Yes, because
he's the originator of the new entries.
He pioneered.
That's a good one.
So thank you, Dr. Manyika, for being here. I don't know, you could maybe just, you know, tell us a bit about yourself, who you are, and what it is that you do.
Well, thank you so much. I'm just a Zimbabwean who loves my country. I'm a bit older than you, Chris. So if I were to go back, when Zimbabwe became independent, I was a young man coming out of high school. And we experienced, as we were growing up, some of the inequities in Rhodesia. And we had a lot of hope when things started off. And along the way, we took some turns, which were unfortunate turns. But I've always been committed to seeing what I can do to bring about change in my country. So over the years, I have worked with different community organizations to try and, particularly in the area of leadership training, inspiring people to become more civically engaged. And then there was a time when I was out of the country, actually working in the U.S. For a couple of decades, doing community work. From the best practices over there, I felt even much more compelled to see what I could do in the country. So some of you might know that between 2009 and 2013, when the government of national unity was in place, I was actually working with the Organ for National Healing here, trying to see how we could create that space as a country where we could talk to each other and possibly reap the peace dividend and would not be so scared of each other. And then 2013 came, and we know the outcome of 2013, and we felt like we had taken two steps forward and five steps back. With the passage of time, I was one of those people who started feeling really challenged that we needed to step up and do something, and also, you know, see what we could do to bring about political change and position ourselves to rebuild the country.
Okay, that's.
Oh, that's.
Yeah. Go ahead, Henry.
Concise yet comprehensive.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Trish.
Oh, okay. No, I thought you were going to, you know, ask the next question. So now you said you were in the U.S. for about two decades, mm-hmm. which is quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And now you've come back and you decided that the presidential seat is where you want to take yourself. Mm-hmm. So Why? What informed this decision? I mean, you'd been away for 20 odd years. That's quite a long time.
Yeah, well, I was away, but I would come back into the country. Like I said, between 2009 and 2013, we were working very, very closely with the Organ for National Healing. So I was very, very involved in what was going on the ground. But I think one of the unfortunate things that has happened in Zimbabwe is this idea that there are some people who are more entitled to participate in the political process than others. And I think that's one of the reasons why we are in the bind that we are in right now. A Zimbabwean is a Zimbabwean. If you're a citizen of Zimbabwe, wherever you are, whether you're in the diaspora, in fact, some countries like, you know, in Israel, if you're a Jewish guy and you're anywhere in the world, you're always thinking about your homeland and whatever experiences you go through, life experiences you go through, they inform how you participate in building your country. So I think Zimbabwe is going to benefit a lot. It's going to be a great, great country when we recognize that every Zimbabwean, wherever they are, must participate fully in the rebuilding of our country and determining what happens to it. So, yeah, I'm a full Zimbabwean, and what entitles me to come and participate is my citizenship, rather than where I found myself to be at for the past two decades.
I think no one will take away your rights as a citizen to participate. I think perhaps the question is why, as president, given you know the limited experience politically of you know the organization of National Healing between 2009 and 2013, you know it's a question we're asking a lot of candidates as to why. With your history and be decided to participate as a presidential candidate as opposed to as an MP or as another part of another party, but why particularly as president?
Well, I think it depends on what you feel a sense of calling for. That's what I feel a sense of calling for, and I really believe that my life experience has prepared me for that. But, you know, to be honest with you, I was thinking about this as I was driving here. One of the things that I love about your program is the name. It says Politics and Beyond. But I don't like the politics part of it. I like the beyond part of it. I like the things that affect people on a day-to-day basis. And I think each and every one of us needs to figure out what is it that we can do beyond you know conventional politics to actually you know bring a difference to our country. And it just so happens that I think the most influential position you get there politically. But what I'm interested in is how we can transform lives and how we can leverage our individual experiences and our collective experiences to transform lives in Zimbabwe and to make sure that Zimbabweans fully live up to their promise and potential. And I actually think I'm prepared for that. You know, to be honest with you, some people might spend so much time thinking, you know, what is it that qualifies a person for the presidency? And in fact, I could ask you that question. What is it that qualifies a person for the presidency? Do you need to have served as a minister for 37 years in the current government? Do you need, what is it that you need? I mean, you just need to have a vision for the country and the conviction that there are some things that you can accomplish and things that you can leverage as well. But I'm interested in the beyond the politics. I'm interested in the, you know, how people live and what we can do to make sure that people, you know, fulfill their potential in Zim.
One thing that people do need to be president is, you know, people to vote for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, there are people who have come before and they have tried to win the presidency from the incumbent government. And one of the where they always tend to fall short is the numbers at mm-hmm. the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
You are relatively new in the political scene. Mm-hmm. There are other opposition movements that have been around. How have you managed or how are you managing to build the numbers? Do you think that come 2018 you will have the, if we say 3 million people voted last election, 1.5 million votes to actually get you into the presidency?
I don't think that there's any shortcuts to mobilizing people and getting the numbers. You have to do the grunt work. You have to be on the ground meeting people. I'm just coming from a meeting with several of our councillors in Harare here. Obviously, there are some things that we have been doing that are not necessarily known yet. And for us, that's fine. I'm very, very happy with working quietly and engaging the people who matter, who are the voters. And time will come when we will, you know, reveal how much strength we have politically in the country. But we're working on it day by day. Look, nobody should feel entitled to the vote of the Zimbabwean people. You work for it. You go out there, you message, you engage, you make sure that you have the most compelling message of all the people who are competing. And hopefully, if your message resonates and you work hard enough and you're seen in all the places that you should be seen, where there are voters and they like your message, you have the numbers. The dangerous thing that I see in Zimbabwe is discounting people because they are new. Let me just say this. We have some very old politicians who have destroyed our country. We have people with very, very old ideas who have absolutely destroyed our country.
Just hold on. Let's connect back to Henry there. These are some of the challenges we face in Zimbabwe, exactly. Where the internet connection is not as strong as it should be.
Yeah.
And so, Henry, you're back up.
So
I think the most important thing is not that somebody is new. The question is, what ideas are they bringing to the table? The other thing also is that, you know, I lived in a country called Romania for 3 years in the 80s. I remember when I left Romania in 1985 thinking there is no way political change is ever going to come to Romania. Because the system which was in Romania at that time was, if you are thinking this is repressive, it was seriously repressive. The third of the adult population in Romania were rumored to be in the Secret Service. So, you know, you could never sit down with a person and start talking about trying to bring about political change because you didn't know who you were talking to. When I left and I came back home after living in Romania, I remember thinking there's no way there will ever be political change. But a moment came in Romania where people were totally fed up. And I truly believe that Zimbabweans are saying to themselves, you know, this is not what we were created to live in, these kinds of conditions. And the populace might just surprise those who think that the new entrants will not be able to mobilize support.
So is your party competing in all 210 constituencies, aside from the presidency?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have ZANU-PF has a super majority in parliament,
yes,
which then amended our constitution yesterday. Also, I'd like to ask your thoughts on that. You know, what are your thoughts on what is happening with our current parliament and with your party, Build Zimbabwe? Is the intention to compete in all 210 constituencies? And how are you going about the process of finding the people to stand in those constituencies?
Yeah, that's our goal, is to compete in all 210 constituencies. And we're doing it constituency by constituency, identifying people who have the leadership potential and investing in those people. And you know what? They say that to eat an elephant, you have to begin, you know, small, you know, you do it in small chunks, don't you? Mm. So we're doing that in a very, very deliberate and thoughtful way. And as we do that, we know that we'll gather momentum to do it countrywide. And right now we've had, you know, fantastic responses from those who we're working with. And in the next couple of weeks, actually, you will see some of the events that we'll be doing, which will actually showcase some of the support that we have on the ground. Well, as far as constitutional changes, look, this is the situation that we are in. There is no way that we're going to bring political change into this country without an unprecedented mobilization and engagement of Zimbabweans in the country and outside. As you and I know, there's a whole chunk of people, there are almost 5 million people who don't vote. And if we don't mobilize those people to actually register to vote, if we don't inspire them, if we don't have a compelling message that says to them, you know, it is your duty to vote, and people actually do that, then, you know, the status quo is going to continue. And as a citizen, all I'm committed to doing is to, you know, to try and do that. And I truly believe that the Zimbabwean people deserve our best effort to engage them. So, yeah, I mean, this is the situation that we are in. They have the majority. They will make the constitutional changes that they will make. But I don't think that you can forever ignore the voice of the people.
You're building, sorry, just to backtrack a little bit. I know that, you called it, your your parliamentary candidates, you call it Project 210 mm-hmm. or 2010 or 210, sorry, right. Plus. Has that launched officially, or is that still works? Well, and if it has, how much youth uptake do you have in that, in terms of maybe a percentage, or if you've only been to a few areas, how many of those people are actually young people? I suppose as defined by the constitution, but I mean genuine young people, not just youthful fit politicians that claim they're youth.
You're talking about the youthies. Well, so this is, as you rightly say, we are new, we're relatively new, and maybe among the new entrants we are older, but we're relatively new. The idea here has been that there should be a partnership between those who feel called, who are on the ground, who want to be MPs or who want to be councillors, a partnership with even my own presidential candidacy. And you know, if we agree on the very same values and we can equip each other and we can resource each other, then we are going to be able to, cause the right kind of problems in this country. We haven't gone throughout the whole country, as it were. We started in Harare, and we have actually identified MPs in Harare. Some we are happy with, others we are not quite. We're going through a process of vetting right now our candidates, and we are behind in our training program, which we wanted to start a couple of months ago. But the thing about it is that we wanted to make sure that the ones that we bring onto the program are actually the right candidates. As you can imagine, there are a lot of people in Zimbabwe who are not employed, and there are a lot of people who will respond to a program like this being launched, not necessarily because they have the call of leadership, but because maybe there seems to be an opportunity to make a living from it. And we're very, very focused on making sure that that's not what we are doing, just simply getting people who want to make a living from politics. We want people who really feel that they can transform their communities. They've got the competencies to do that. And they're also willing to learn. They're willing to actually be challenged on what they know, and to be equipped so that they can bring transformation to their communities. Now, when it comes to the demographics of who it is that is coming forward as a leader or as a councillor, we have not sat down and said, do we have 20% young people, 20% women? We're going to be doing that.
20% is not enough, by the way. if that's the number you're throwing about
I know it should be something like 40-50%, but anyway, here's what I'm saying is that we're not actually
the youth is 78% of this country under 35, right. So maybe it should be around that figure.
Well, look, the thing about it is that the people who should lead in this country, it's not just one demographic.
That's right.
We should have every demographic stepping forward and saying we need change in our country. And I think sometimes, I really do believe that we make a mistake by simply focusing on one demographic, because there is a smaller demographic which is holding, I think, the entire nation to ransom in some ways. And we've got to address that demographic. And we've got to woo them from whatever side they are in to say, look, we deserve the change that we need in this country. So I really don't want this to be a situation where we're playing off one generation against the other. However, we must recognize that unless we mobilize the young people in this country to register to vote and to actually vote and to stand in parliament, to stand for parliamentary seats, to run as councillors, then we're not going to bring about that change. But I think it's important for us to make sure that this is a battle for everybody.
You mentioned that you started in Harare in terms of canvassing mm-hmm. for your MP candidates. Mm-hmm. And you are behind, you said, in terms of your training. Mm-hmm. And you plan on fielding candidates in all 210 constituencies. Mm-hmm. Will you have enough time to actually find the people, train the people the way you say that you want to, and then, campaign for all 210 seats in parliament?
I don't know how much time is enough time, to be honest with you, Chris. I actually think that whether it's 3 months out before the election or 10 months out before the election or 9 months, whatever time there is, people should step up and actually volunteer themselves to lead if they've got the qualities of leadership. And we must do whatever we need. If it is urgent that if we are supposed to compact our training program and do it within 2 months and make sure that people are ready to take up those positions, we must do it. Because I think that's the other thing that kind of discourage, we can discourage ourselves as people are engaged in this process by always looking at, do you have enough time? Well, the other question that people would ask is, do you have enough resources? Well, who in Zimbabwe right now, if you look at all the political parties, the biggest advantage goes to ZANU-PF, because ZANU-PF can actually use the resources of the state. They can commandeer the resources of the state, and actually, because there's no daylight between ZANU-PF as a political party and the government and the state. So who has enough resources? It's not a question of having enough time or enough resources. It's the conviction that we must have as Zimbabweans that we actually want political change. And we must work as hard as we can, whether we are 12 months out. In fact, the funny thing about this, Chris and Henry, is 2 years out, when I was having conversations with people 2 years out, they were saying, well, we've run out of time, you know. So what's enough time in Zimbabwe? I really, truly believe it's our commitment and our conviction to bring about change that we should be talking about.
So you spoke about resources. I just want to find out, you spoke about resources. Mm-hmm. Number one, do you have a figure of how much it's actually you're actually going to need? And how are you raising the resources in terms of financial resources? I don't know if it's, I ask this question because some of the new entrants, Fadzai Mahere, for example, mm-hmm. has come out and said mm-hmm. that, she needs, I think it's $30,000 mm-hmm. and that she's trying to raise for her campaign. And that's one parliamentary seat. Mm-hmm. And these are some of the issues that come
and,
up.
Dr. Nkosana Moyo has decided to co-fund me a generosity account for $500,000 as well for his presidential campaign. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's crowdfunding for about $500,000. Mm-hmm. So do you have a figure like that at all?
No, I don't have a figure like that. What I know is that it is going to take a lot of resources. And to be honest with you, I really don't think that it is helpful to be saying I have this much money or this is how I raise the money and so on. I truly believe that, if I may suggest, that right now what we need to be focusing on is how do we engage, like you rightly say, this cohort of young people who really need to register to vote and to go to the vote. I think anybody who has actually entered the race, we must presume that they have a funding plan for their, but I don't know that it is helpful to say, I have this much money. And also, I don't think that it is helpful to presume how the Zimbabwean people are going to respond to our calls for us as Zimbabweans to fund the things that we do. We know that people are going through difficult times. All we can do is to say to Zimbabweans, this is going to be your freedom. It's and you must have skin in the game.
I can appreciate, and I think we'll move on. But I think a major thing to do with the funding is that our analysis of how you spoke about the state funding is that it's really become a situation of the politics of the belly very often. Mm-hmm. And another thing is that, people tend to have this impression that if, and I think this is why some of these other candidates are quite popular, these other independent candidates are quite popular, is that if you have financial means within yourself, you are less likely to be corrupt. And I think for our generation, a lot of people are tired with corruption. A lot of people are tired with, either vote buying or anything like that. So they would prefer to see someone who has that plan. And I think that's why I appreciate that you'd like to move on. And I think, but I just wanted to explain to you, that's why people find that question of resources important, because they also sort of have a comfort, maybe call it the Donald Trump effect, if you will, right. Of saying a candidate that has their Zimzao that won't need to steal from the electorate.
Well, I don't know if that's true, though. I mean, you look at the history of politics globally, it doesn't mean that if you're rich, you are the most morally sound person. So I think there's that assumption. But the thing that should drive us as Zimbabweans is the fact that we need change in this country, and we must have people of integrity. Whether those people have money or don't have money is besides the point. We must have people of integrity who paint the right picture for us about where we should go and inspire people to rise up and participate in the political process. If this becomes about who has more money than the other, then I think we have missed it. People with the right ideas and people of integrity must run this race, and they must be funded by us. We must, as citizens, respond to the message of those who we put to the test, and we can tell this is a person of integrity. You may be surprised to hear me say this. I am not in this and with a sense of entitlement that, you know, I'm going to win this and people have to support me. No, I think what Zimbabwe needs is for each and every one of us who says they want to be president, they want to be MPs, they want to be councillors, to bring to the Zimbabwean people the absolute best compelling message and compete for the hearts and minds of the people of Zimbabwe. And that way, we will have the democracy that we want.
What is the ideology of Build Zimbabwe Alliance? You know, we tend to get caught up in, we've had ZANU-PF regime for 37 years and Mugabe must go as one of the arguments that is brought forward. But what is the, you know, what is the underlying ideology of your party? If you then come into office in 2018, what will be the driving arguments as you move the nation forward? What are some of the plans that you have for the country as you enact your ideology?
Well, thank you for that. So I truly believe that Zimbabwe has a leadership problem. A lot of times when we see countries where there are problems, we focus on the economics of it and all of that. But those are consequences of bad leadership. And I truly believe that it's not just a question of executive leadership, because when you talk about service delivery, for instance, we're not talking about national leadership. We're talking about provincial and local government. So Zimbabwe has a leadership problem, generally speaking. And our commitment as BZA is to ensure that we have leadership renewal from top to bottom. So, you know, you asked earlier about our program, P210 Plus program. It's not just focusing on MPs, we're focusing on councillors as well. Because if you do not have the right councillors, then you're never going to be able to resuscitate provincial economies. And for me, I hear a lot of people talking about, you know, we're going to, you know, rebuild the economy of this country. And a lot of times what they're talking about is the economy of Harare, or they're talking about the economy of Blue Whale. What I believe is that we are never going to be able to resuscitate the economy of this country until we resuscitate the economies of the provinces and of the local communities. And so BZA's approach is that we need top-to-bottom leadership renewal, not just at the executive level, but even at local level. And we also believe that we have to have province-focused economic policy. So one of the things that we have been advocating is that in the event that the Zimbabwean people give us a mandate, we are going to make sure that we have a plan, a business resuscitation plan for each province. If you go back historically and you're looking at that time when we used to have high employment numbers and we used to have all these opportunities for people to go to apprenticeships and so on, that was done by an economy which was functioning at every level, including at provincial level. So we need to resuscitate provincial economies. We need to be able to do an asset mapping of our provinces to see where are the areas where we can invest and where can we lure partnerships into these provinces so that those economies can thrive again. I believe in small government, and I'm on record already as saying that we're going to cut the size of the executive in the event that we get a mandate from 30-something MPs to 14 MPs. Because we don't need that. We don't need that huge government to actually create the environment for businesses to thrive. I also believe that we should cut down on our legislature, which is humongous. And right now, including the 210 elected MPs, we have an additional number of MPs who are appointed, and we have senators. And if you look at our legislature, it's 350 strong. When you divide by 10 the number of provinces, that is an average of 35. Representatives in the legislature per province. Well, that's wasteful. You know, that money needs to go into the productive sector. So those are some of the things that we really feel need urgent attention. And then there are things that we need to do. You know, some people will say, you know, what are you going to do with the land issue and so on? Look, we know that there was the Land Apportionment Act in 1930. We know that. We know that black people were dispossessed and in put into tribal trust lands, and that was one of the main reasons why people went to war. And we are not saying that we'll come back in and we'll take land and we'll give it back. That is not our commitment. Our commitment is that if we have taken this land, then we must make sure that it actually functions for the benefit of the country and make sure that you can mainstream, you can bring some of these smaller farmers into, you know, into commercial agriculture. As you, what I found out recently, which is really astonishing, is that this country has 10,000 dams. Out of the 12,000 dams in the region, we have 10,000. And if we really wanted to be serious about resuscitating agriculture, we can do it. If we have the right leadership that is connecting the resources that we have as a nation with the people that we have, we could actually very, very easily recover our economy just like that. So these are some of the things that we're committed to in making sure that we restore property rights, making sure that we depoliticize our police force. And let me say this lastly, and this I know relates to the young people. Every institution of higher learning in this country must become an incubator of entrepreneurship. It must. And in order for that to happen, we have to have different leadership at the helm of some of these institutions. So this idea that you appoint the head of an institution, which is in Masingo, which is an institution of higher learning, and it's a political appointment, doesn't serve us well. You have to have innovative leaders who understand what happens when a young person goes into this institution of higher learning, that this is the time when they are at their best intellectually. And this is the time when they can be inspired with ideas that can actually start industries. So we're very, very committed to making sure that we depoliticize the appointment of leaders of institutions of higher learning so that those institutions can be incubators of entrepreneurship in our country.
All right. You know, you speak very passionately about these things, which is great. And it's, I think, you know, the leadership focus is, you know, it seems so obvious, but it's a novel way to look at it. What I'm more interested in is, you know, that being said and done, the practicalities of the coming election. There's been lots of talk of the coalition. There's been lots of talk of, you know, opposition parties coming together as a way to de-seat and dethrone the current government.
You've been watching too much Game of Thrones.
You know, exactly. I know nothing. But, you know, so this question is a dual question. Your position on coalitions, you said the country needs leadership renewal. Does that extend to your compatriots in the opposition there? And are you willing to join any coalition that is formed or a type of coalition that is formed as, you know, a means to an end ultimately for the goal of bringing about the change and perhaps, you know, gaining some influence to begin implementing your leadership program?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm on record as, you know, I've been asked this question on several occasions, and then this is what I've said, because I've been trying to understand, you know, there are people who say, yeah, you know, you must join the Grand Coalition. And I ask them and I say, what does that mean? What does a Grand Coalition mean? Does a Grand Coalition mean just an aggregation of opposition political parties? Or does a Grand Coalition mean coming up with the absolute best message and programs that inspire the people of Zimbabwe to actually go out there and register to vote, and then on an election day to actually go and vote? Is that the coming together of those brilliant ideas and those passionate leaders who, you know, who paint that picture for us and inspire these 5 million people to vote? If that's the coalition, then that's a winning coalition. I'll tell you what my fear is. My fear is that we will be so lazy as people in the opposition that we'll think that simply coming together is going to do it for us. And the truth of the matter, as far as I can see, is I don't see how that inspires people to register to vote. I don't see how that inspires people to actually go out to the polls and vote.
But surely, yeah. if you say that, you know, if you do become part of this grand coalition and you articulate your ideas and, you know, you can advocate for this mobilizing of people and that sort of thing, your input would then suggest that you form part of shaping what it is that it should be.
Well, that's
and if you see that people are being lazy, then you know you still have the option to pull out. It's not like you're forming one political party.
Yeah.
Though, you know, at the end of the day, some might argue this is what it looks like on the face of it.
But Chris, why don't you hold our feet to the fire and say, show me your plan first, and then work out a partnership with those people who have an equally compelling plan and come out with a force that can actually unseat the current system. Why is it that there is no pressure? Because some of the people that, look, if I'm going to go into a coalition with anybody, I have to know where they stand. I have to know where they stand when it comes to size of government. I have to know where they stand when it comes to their economic policy, and I have to be clear about it. And it has to be inspiring even to me, you know. And when I go into negotiations with anyone on a coalition, they also have to be inspired by what I bring. Why do we want to shortchange that process of actually, you know, holding the feet of the opposition to the fire and insisting that we want to hear very, very clearly what your message is and want to make sure that it's inspiring, and then you guys come together, because then you can't be stopped. Because what I fear is that, you know, we will come together and we'll lose, and that would be the tragedy. I am in support of a winning coalition. I'm in support of people coming together because they have the best ideas and they want to leverage each other's ideas to actually bring about change in the country. That I would be in support of.
So right now you don't say that the coalition is inspiring in any way?
No, I haven't seen, I haven't been inspired enough, obviously, to join any of the conversations right now. But that doesn't mean that I won't be. You know, as time goes on, as we see what are the ideas that are being put out there on the table, things might change. But, you know, to be honest with you, I haven't.
And would you be open to not being the presidential candidate in the coalition?
Would I be open to not being the presidential candidate? I would be open to do anything to bring about political change in our country and to make sure that we position ourselves to build the country. I would be open to anything. But the idea that, you know, you just come together and somehow if you come together, 5 million people are going to be inspired to vote, to me, it doesn't make any sense. You have to have a compelling vision for the country and then come together in strength, unite in strength. And in fact, you know, there's an assumption that's there when it comes to conversations about the coalition, which is really sad. It's like you guys are weak, so unite in your weakness and then you're going to be strong. I don't think it works that way.
I think, you know, I understand you. I think your position is quite clear on that. I don't know. I haven't seen. Were you a part of, you know, NERA at all? And if you weren't, did you not think that the fight for, you know, petitioning ZEC for, you know, evening out the electoral playing field was something that's important enough for the Build Zimbabwe Alliance to be part of in that way? And, you know, where do you stand on, you know, these issues of BVR and you know, the current administration of the Electoral Commission?
I have been accused of trying to be part of NERA and having been turned down by NERA and all of that. So, you know, the conversation about NERA is always an amusing one for me. We support every effort by every Zimbabwean to put pressure on the current government to make sure that the playing field is level. Everyone. And unfortunately in Zimbabwe, some of these institutions, and I'm not specifically referring to NERA, but there are a lot of formations in this country that start off and it's for one purpose, and then you go in there and you find that it's for a different purpose. I really would love for us all, every political party, and every institution, including NERA, to mobilize the people of Zimbabwe to make sure that we can put pressure on the current government to even level the playing field. And, you know, any Zimbabwean who loves this country and who wants to see change has to want that, whether that person or that organization is part of NERA or not. You have to want an even playing field so that the voices of the people can be heard. And BZA is not any different. We said that from the beginning, even from the time that I was beginning to message. when we're having meetings outside the country, when we're in New York. That's part of the reason why we participated in all those demonstrations, to try and mobilize our friends outside the country and within the country to put pressure on our government to level the playing field. So, one of the things that people might not realize is that there's a lot of politics even when it comes to being part of any of these organizations, which is why I go back to what I said earlier on. I love the name of your program, Politics and Beyond. I would love to have institutions like NERA and other organizations go beyond the politics of people participating in them and actually, you know, making it clear that what they are interested in is simply making sure that there's a level playing field.
With regards to the elections and NERA, moving away from NERA, but focusing on ZEC and the level playing field, do you think the playing field is level as it currently is now? And by the time you get to 2018, what is BZA doing to ensure that the playing field is level? And if the playing field doesn't level out to a way that you are comfortable with, are you still going to participate or will you boycott?
Good question. So who levels the playing field? The playing field is obviously not level. ZANU-PF has all the advantages right now, and as I said earlier, they have the resources. They control the machinery, the timetable of the election, and all of that. So they have an unfair advantage. Generally speaking, incumbents usually have that unfair advantage. So now who levels the playing field? So, we can come together as political parties and put the pressure, and we have. We have gone to meetings with ZEC, and we have made our views known about what should happen and all of that. And the question is, does the current government listen to what we say? Well, that's part of the reason why we want this political change, isn't it? They don't. So I truly believe that the one way to level the playing field is by making this government understand that the people are truly, truly fed up. If the opposition parties can accomplish an unprecedented mobilization of Zimbabweans, and it's obvious, and whether it's obvious in the size of the public meetings we have, or whether it's obvious even in just the election turnout itself, that is, we will have begun to put the kind of pressure that the incumbent government might actually yield to, so that the voices of the people are respected. You asked and you said, if the playing field is not level, will you participate? We're not there yet. I don't know what the situation is going to be like in 6 months or so. Right now, we are working to make sure we can engage the people of Zimbabwe to participate in this process. And then we'll evaluate to see what's going on.
But is it not a bit disingenuous to say we need high turnout? Because in 2008, there was high turnout. There was an electoral victory and the government disregarded it. So I think you can't now, 8 years later or 10 years later, say that, putting unprecedented or, I even bring you back to 2013. I remember pictures of that MDC crossover rally where, most of that city square there, just on the outside of what is now Rainbow Towers, was painted red, and there was a massive turnout. And yet still what happened in the election happened in the election. So you can say, we need a voter turnout. There was a voter turnout in 2008. That didn't change the government. Mm-hmm. You can say we need people on the street. There have been people on the street since 2002. That hasn't changed the government. Mm-hmm. So don't you think that maybe, particularly in this situation and the scenario that we're in today, mm-hmm. The structural issues which some of these people are calling for, you should probably, be pointing at some of those structural issues, because at the end of the day, I don't agree with your belief in this government's respect for the majority.
No, I never said this government is going to respect the wishes of the majority, and the structural issues.
If that's what happened, I don't know what happened in 2018, but if there's a situation where there is a majority, do you believe that they respect it?
Well, look, that's precisely the issue. So let's go back. You can't expect me to advocate for people not to vote or to engage, to register to vote, because all these things must happen concurrently. The messaging, addressing the structural issues and mobilizing people to register to vote must happen concurrently. It's not one or the other. And we are not saying we're not addressing the structural issues. Of course, we are. You asked me a question about NERA, and what did I say? I said every single political party in Zimbabwe and every organization, whether it's NERA or not, must actually be engaged in putting pressure on the system to make sure that you level the playing field. So that needs to happen. And then the other thing that needs to happen, because, you know, some of these things, you can't sequence them like that. So let's have the structural issues. And then after that, we'll, you know, start to mobilize people to register to vote. We must do that at the same time. And I think that as Zimbabweans, that's one thing that we must challenge ourselves, that we can chew gum and walk at the same time. And that's what
I think
doing.
Chris's question was about ZEC. I think that's where I was coming from. Mm-hmm. Because I know we can encourage people to register to vote. Mm-hmm. We can encourage people to vote. But as a presidential candidate, you have to be aware of the situation in Zimbabwe and what has come before you. Do you suggest that people are going to either protect their vote, or you personally need to be cognizant of the fact that, okay, fine, in 2018, if I, Dr. Nyawo Manika, do win, it's not guaranteed that I'm going to come into power. Right. So what I was more interested in is, I completely agree, people must register to vote, people must vote, but that's not where it stops. And if that's not in the consideration in what's happening before, then it's worrying, because then the point?
No, I think the assumption is wrong that that's not in the consideration. By the way, we actually engage ZEC on a weekly basis. We have the highest level of representation in actually talking to ZEC. Our guy was at ZEC last week, and the riot police was there, even at ZEC. Every time now that our people have a meeting with ZEC, the riot police is actually present over there. So we are part of that process. We are part, just like the MDC is part of that process, and most of the opposition parties are actually represented there. So that's not something that we are not doing. What I'm saying is, none of these things need to happen in, you can't neglect one part of it and just focus on one. We have to put pressure on ZEC. We have to put pressure on the government to level the playing field. We have to mobilize people to register to vote. We have to make sure that when it comes to the election, they actually go out there and vote. So all of it needs to happen at the same time.
With regards to your position as a presidential candidate, you are also a pastor, mm-hmm. If I am to be correct.
Yeah.
What is your position in terms of the separation of the church and the state? We've seen a lot of our politicians going to canvass in different churches and the apostolic faith for one, mm-hmm. where they, you know, put on the gowns and they go and they, essentially it's kissing babies, I suppose, you know. Right. So how do you relate in terms of the work of the church and the work of the state and the separation between the two entities? And does church doctrine influence your ideology as a political party?
Very, very interesting question, and one that I'm so glad you asked. And I was hoping that you would ask that question, because I truly believe that each and everyone's responsibility, whether you are a corporate being like a church or an individual leading a family, our responsibility is to make sure that we engage our people in the responsibility of citizenship. And in fact, the promises of our faith, if I may, you go back to John 3:16, and it says Jesus came that we may have life and have it more abundantly. And when people are not able to feed themselves, that's not having abundant life. When people are not able to send their children to school, that's not abundant life. When people are not able to have jobs, that's not abundant life. And the way that you ensure that you have abundant life is participating in the civic process, offering yourself for leadership in your areas. And when you see that things are going wrong in your community, you make sure that you address them. It's not a question of always deferring to the authorities. It's a question of making sure that you advocate for the right things. And if you see that people are being oppressed, you get up and you speak out on behalf of those that are oppressed. So I am more inspired by my faith to do what I do as a citizen. That is, for me, is the real whole point of my faith. You know, it is my faith that drives me to say it's not right for people to be repressed. It's not right for soldiers to beat up innocent people who are simply exercising their constitutional rights to demonstrate. It's my faith that says the police can't just arrest someone without cause, because according to my faith, you know, justice must be the thing that really, you know, guides us in our interactions with others. So that's more where the relevance of my faith. The other thing I've been also saying to my brothers and sisters who are in the faith, the Bible tells us very clearly that we must be the light of the world, and we must light the way when it comes to making sure that we have leaders of integrity. We as believers must lead the way. You know, we must be leaders of integrity. I think these issues of church and state sometimes are really not looked at properly, because people start asking, well, you know, if you come into power, does that mean an un-Christian cannot vote for BZA, or will they have their rights truncated? Well, that doesn't make any sense. You know, a citizen of Zimbabwe is a citizen of Zimbabwe. And whoever is elected by the people to lead this country must understand that. And it's not just people who agree with you. It's not just people who believe what you believe. It's the people who were put in this place called Zimbabwe by God. You know, and they're all Zimbabwean citizens. So that's my approach to the faith question.
Yeah, that's good. I'd never. It was a good question. I hadn't picked up that you're a pastor as well. So you see, I'm also being educated as I hope.
I believe you're also a. Actually, the question is, you are Dr. Manyika. What is the doctor in, or the doctorate in, or, you know, this is a question that always comes up. We've addressed on this podcast the issue of, you know, PhDs in this country, and how everyone likes titles, and yet, you know, some of them were not sure where they, how, you know, how genuine they actually are. So just curious to find out about your PhD.
Well, okay, actually, my initial training is in journalism. That's my first degree. And then I got a master's in foreign service from Georgetown University. I was training to actually become a diplomat at one time. And then I got a PhD in theology and Christian leadership.
Okay. All right.
All right. Yeah, no, it's a personal crusade of ours to be fake doctorate busters. So everyone who comes onto the...
Yeah, we're trying to root out as many, you know, fake PhDs as we can. Or those that are bought. Let's not call them.
Right.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, foreign... You said it's a master's in foreign...
In foreign service,
In foreign service. With that background, or that, you know, academic knowledge, and looking at Zimbabwe, where it currently is, its position in the world, and the issues that are going on, what would you say would be the best steps for Zimbabwe to turn around in terms of engaging the international community?
Well, it starts with us engaging each other. You know, I think, you know, good foreign policy is dependent on the health, the political health of a country. And countries that are dysfunctional, countries that are, you know, going through hard times, do not have the luxury of being able to engage other countries in a healthy way. So it really starts with us being a healthy country.
Sorry.
And for me, that's why my passion is not just coming up with, you know, this is what we can do to relate with a country like the U.S. Well, all of this goes back to, so for instance, what are the things that harms international relations? What harms international relations is the perception of other countries when it comes to how you treat their business interests in your own country. And a lot of times when you have a dysfunctional economy like ours, you are going to treat people in the wrong way, and it affects your international politics as well and your international relationships. So for me, good foreign policy starts with a healthy country, and a healthy economy, and a strong country that can then project its national interest and actually advocate for it in international fora. You know, so as long as we don't have that, if you look at our situation in Zimbabwe today, and you look even at our foreign policy and the state of our embassies and stuff like that, it's a reflection of how dysfunctional and how broken our country is. So, you know, it starts with us. We have to engage each other. We have to build our country. We have to build a healthy country. We have to equip those who represent us outside of our country so that they can advocate for our best interests, because we have something of value to protect. We have something that we're actually proud of. So it starts with the local economy.
Yeah, I think, I think if we started getting to that, I was going to ask about just, you know, the global pressures that, you know, smaller economies generally feel. Mm-hmm. But I think if we started getting into more of those theoretical things, I don't know what our time is like. So I was going to ask Chris what our time is like. But I was interested to know about, you know, your stance on things like sanctions, and as far as, you know, that's something tangible that is affecting the country. And I don't think that they're immediately going to go away because you're mm-hmm. president. If you become elected president, you might have to make some concessions. And I think a lot of people, a lot of young people who, you know, may definitely espouse some of the values that for the land reform and things like that, right. You know, believe, you know, you're a fledgling government like yours might be under some pressure to make some concessions with those things, including the land, including, you know, the resources, including things like indigenization. You know, we haven't spoken about those actual policies, and I'd like to know your stance on something like indigenization, for example. You know, are you a Pan-Africanist in that way?
There's no great country which doesn't have strong indigenous economic backbone. There's no country which doesn't have that. What you actually need is to make sure that whatever indigenous economy you're building can actually partner with foreign capital to strengthen itself. So you actually work against yourself if you make it difficult for your indigenous industries and so on to partner with global capital to actually strengthen themselves and take advantage of the business of opportunities that might be there globally. So this is not, and I think that's one of the biggest problems that we've had in Zimbabwe, that we've had this zero-sum game mentality, that it's either indigenization or nothing. No, we have to have the kind of policies that attract partnership between foreign capital and indigenous business people. There's no country, there's no strong country which doesn't have a strong indigenous backbone. You can't build a great country without that.
Okay. Henry was asking about time. We're really close to wrapping up, actually. And it's been a pleasure to have you here and hear some of the things that you said. What I want to know is what is your plan? What are the plans? What can we expect to see in the next 12 months? If we are to say that the election will be 12 months from today,
right.
What is it that we can see within the next 12 months?
Well, thank you so much for having me. And it's just a joy to be here and to be talking to you guys. But here's what I'm going to commit to you. I am totally focused on making sure that we can share with the Zimbabwean people a vision of what we can be. I'm totally focused on making sure that I can challenge each and every Zimbabwean, whatever their generation, to play their part in building their country. And I'm mindlessly focused on that. I'm also one of the messages that I was telling some people today. For years, we have not had the change that we want because vano tengeka, you know, people can be bribed into accepting things which are not acceptable. It is high time that we made that statement that hati tengeki. It doesn't matter what you give me. If you give me a stand, it doesn't guarantee me that I'm going to be able to feed my family after the elections next year. And in any case, we know that after the election, you can send people to repossess that farm or repossess that stand. So you're going to hear me talking about this mindlessly. And what we want to put in Zimbabwean people is this idea, we cannot be bought. We can't. We have to make the right decisions for our country. We have to have the right leadership. We have to have the right policies. We have to have people of integrity actually leading our country. And that's really going to be our message, unrelenting message. And the other part of our message is I'm going to be challenging those people who don't register to vote to actually register to vote so that you can have something to fight for, even if you are cheated. And as we were talking about earlier on, as I was answering Henry, we are committed to making sure that we put pressure on ZEC, pressure on the government to level the playing field. But we're also telling Zimbabweans, you know, don't think that if they level the playing field and you don't register to vote, and they go out there and they mobilize their people, that anything is going to change in this country. That's going to be our unrelenting message, and we're going to work hard. That's the other thing that you're going to see. We are going to work hard, and we're going to work hard and work hard until the day of the election. Hopefully, you will give us a mandate to bring the change to our country that we need.
How, you spoke about registering to vote. I just want to get an idea. What is your position on biometric voter registration and the process that has happened thus far?
Yeah, it's just unfortunate that in Zimbabwe, some of these things, which may be good things, happen in a wrong context. Because wherever you go in the world, you're going to find that whether it's just getting data from people to register them, to get IDs or whatever, that there is this biometric process that's, it's global. You know, we're living in a digital world. But unfortunately, our system is so broken that whatever form of registration happens, it might not even be fair. So, and it puts us in a dilemma because, it, you know, as opposition people, it's like, well, you know, if you oppose BVR, are you against the modernization of registration processes? No, we're not. And at the end of the day, it's really not about BVR or non-BVR. It's about the process being run by people who can be trusted, and making sure that it serves the population of Zimbabwe, not one political party. So that's where the dilemma is for us. But we will keep on putting pressure that they do the right thing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. It was a great interview. I enjoy the fact that your ideas, and it's particularly novel, this leadership, this focus on leadership as almost an ideology. Just like to maybe remind you that Zim is very big, so please get your ideas out there quickly. I think Simbamakoni learned in 2008 how big Zimbabwe is. So if it means you're every day from now until 2018, until this time, I suppose I think we might be actually hitting the latest date in a year's time that we can host at the the election.
Right.
I think it's just I don't know if, I'm not sure if it's the 26th of July or 26th of August, which is the latest date next year they can have the election.
Mm-hmm.
I do encourage you, if it means taking 2-3 trips to different provinces every week, get those ideas out there, because at the end of the day, you're changing the conversation and people can only benefit from that. Thank you very much for being on the...
I'm very interested to see how you're going to do it, because, you know, as Henry said, Simamakoni learned the hard way that Zimbabwe is very big. But also Zimbabwe is diverse.
Right.
As much as we might, you know, want to, I think a crisis we have is that all politics happens in Harare.
Yeah.
You know, and we forget that there are places, you know, out there, Kumarua, Chaiko, Chaiko, where they, some places don't even get radio.
Yeah.
And
Che Mali Party, you know, all these places out there, and there are voters there.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know how it is that you're going to reach out to these people. I don't know if you've got a plan or if you've been.
We do. We do. And you know, the reality, I'm so glad that you guys are very, very clear on what the situation is in our country. Right now, if you look at the division of the between the urban and rural constituencies, we have 67 urban. Well, some of them are peri-urban, but it's 67 and 143 rural. So there's no way you can win this election concentrating on the 67. You have to make sure that you actually win in the 143 as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we are on the same page. We are working on it. I can promise you that we are going to be in different parts of this country, not 2 times a week, Henry, but 3 times or 4 times a week.
Do you have a sort of deadline as to when you want to have, you know, say all your MPs in place? Yeah, is there a date where you're like, by this certain date we should have all 210 people that we know are going to run? Because people have seen you, but we don't know who is going to be standing in Mount Pleasant or who is going to be standing in Che or Mali Party.
Well, Mount Pleasant, why did you go straight to Fadzisi?
It was the first one that came to mind.
Be careful, because Fadzi is listening.
You're already trying to find challenges for advocate Mayeri.
You know what? Maybe she'd be interested to know who she's going to come up against from BZ.
Right.
Their slogan is Manyane BZ.
Manyane BZ, yeah.
Yeah, that's so right. She wants to know who. Which bizarre is it that's going to be coming up again? No, so is there a date where you know where you say this by then we should know?
Let me tell you what I did before, right? I set myself a date and I learned my lesson.
Okay.
We need the best leadership. Is the answer that I can give you.
Okay.
We need the best leadership. We need to identify people who are the right people and not necessarily, look, if it happens before, September this year that we have everybody, that would absolutely be great.
Mm-hmm.
But we need the best candidates in each constituency, and that's how we are operating. And if we can get that, whether there is 5 months to the election or 10 months to the election, I really believe that they have a fair chance of upsetting things.
So if you don't get 210 and say you get maybe 100 and so, are you still going to just go with that in terms of the best leadership?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you have to have the best leadership. That's really, really important.
Okay.
And you'll be surprised, though, at how well we've done in some places already in terms of, and we see that by how many people end up on our rolls as a party. It's not, the election is not there yet.
Sure.
So we can only count on the number of people that we see on our rolls. So in some places, we're doing quite well. And then, in some places, you partner with somebody and then you realize, they're not really the right person, and you part ways. But we are really committed to that process of identifying the right leadership. Because if we do, because as I said at the beginning, our belief is that Zimbabwe is facing a leadership crisis, and we need leadership renewal from top to bottom. So if we're going to be consistent with that, then we need the right leadership.
So where can people find you online to engage?
They can find us at www.buildzimbabwe.org.
Okay.
That's where we are.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. You've been listening to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba. You can find me at Chris Charamba on all social media.
And I'm Henry Beattie. And you can find me tweeting about Arsenal on all social media at Henry Beattie. I don't talk politics anymore on social media.
Yeah, you got tired, huh? They were coming after you.
I got tired. They were coming after me, so...
Yeah, don't worry, I'm going to bait him into coming back to certain conversations. So next week I'll let you know if I've won in my battle. All right, thank you very much. Free to
do it.
Yeah. And now it's Capital 263